Okay, so the word mazel, mazel tov, on siman tov, it's a Hebrew word, loosely translated these days as luck, but it also relates to the constellations, to astrology, the word mazel, and that's the origin, actually, of mazel tov. But we know we start always with a joke. So if you know a little bit of Yiddish, there's a character known as the Shlemazel. Have you heard of the Shlemazel? Shlemazel means a person who has bad luck. It comes from German. Shlim is bad, and mazel is luck. So Shlemazel, it's a mix of German and Hebrew. Somebody with bad luck. There's another character. Yes, we are recording. There's another character that is known as the Shlemiel. The Shlemiel is kind of like the Shlemazel, but the Shlemiel is the clumsy person, the Shlemiel. The Shlemazel doesn't have any luck. And then there's a third person, he's known as a Nudnik. A Nudnik in Yiddish is a nudge, a Nudnik. So somebody asked the question, what is the difference between a Shlemiel, a Shlemazel, and a Nudnik? So we're getting a Yiddish lesson over here. So they said that the Shlemiel trips and spills the soup on the Shlemazel, and the Nudnik wants to know what kind of soup was it. So today we'll talk about mazel. Oy mazel, skim tamol fayeden. That's a Yiddish song. Nish nor nish famir. The mazel comes for everybody except for me. And we'll talk about mazel, astrology, particularly astrology in Jewish tradition. By a raise of hands, how many of you have studied this topic in depth? How about not so in depth in Judaism? Okay, we got one. Excellent. All right, so I think you're gonna be very interested in what we're going to learn tonight. It's very interesting teachings from our Torah, from our Talmud, from our Kabbalah, down to very practical applications today, day and age. So there's three parts. I want to divide the whole class tonight into three parts. Number one is kind of an academic study. We're going to be like detectives. We're going to look through sources in the Torah, in the Bible, in the Talmud, in the Midrash, and we're going to find out what does the Torah say about astrology. Part two is going to be the practical. Is it a good idea to be involved in astrology, in horoscopes, or whatever it is, or should that be something that we should stay away from? And part three, which is almost like a wait for it moment for people who are very skeptical of the whole story of astrology. Part three is going to be a modern day version of astrology and how Judaism deals with that. I call it the modern day determinism. But wait for it. Let's start with the academic side. Astrology in the Torah. The first appearance of astrology in the Torah that I can recall, maybe there's probably before this, but that I can think of, is in Genesis with the story of Abraham. Okay, and when I say that the first appearance is in Genesis, this is actually in the Midrash. It's not, you won't see it in the text itself of the Bible, of the Torah, but in the Midrash, in the commentaries, you will see an appearance of mazel, of astrology. And that is the story of Abraham. God tells Abraham, you're going to have a son. And Abraham was very old. And God tells him, come outside. Let's take this outside. Tzei hachutza. He tells him, go outside. And he goes outside. Vayetze hachutza. And God points to the, God shows him the heavens. He says, you see the stars of the heavens? You see how many there are? That's, you're going to have more descendants than that. Just like you can't count the stars, you won't be able to count your descendants. The Midrash on that says that Abraham's apprehension, Abraham's hesitancy, his skepticism was based on the fact that Abraham himself was an astrologer. He was a great mind who knew a lot of things. One of the things that he knew was astrology. And he saw in the stars that he is not going to have a child. He saw that in his mazel. He saw that in his destiny. And so the Midrash says that when God tells him, go outside, he's not just saying go outside from in your tent, out into the clean desert air. What he's saying is, Tzei me'itz dagninut shelcha. Go out from your whole frame of reference of astrology. Leave that world of astrology, come into my world, and I'm going to show you that you will have a child. That's the first appearance of astrology in the Torah, and kind of gives away much of the class. But let's go to the next one. This one we have in our source sheets, in our student book. Let me see if I can pull it up here. Here we go. I'll share the screen. Can you see that? Looks like Christopher Columbus or somebody. Stars and signs. Unknown astronomer. So close. Columbus must have known a thing or two about astronomy to get around and make it to India. Okay, we're going to skip all of this. You have it. If you didn't receive this, I'm happy to send it to you. This is about, you know, I like to move quickly. We have limited time. So, okay, let's look at this. We do have this astrological system found in Talmudic sources based on the hours. You can look at that in greater length. And what these indicate if a person is born at a certain hour. The monthly mazalot that are loosely connected to the zodiac. Let's see, what are we are? We're now in Iyar, the month of Iyar. That's what we're in right now. And that's Shor. We're in Taurus, according to the Jewish zodiac. Okay. Let's look at this text, which is text number 1A on page 48 of the book. Pharaoh's decree. Let's look at it in Hebrew here. Vayitzav Paro lechol amo lemor. This is down in Egypt. And Paro is getting nervous about these Jews. They're just proliferating. Too many Jews. As a taxi driver told me, he didn't speak English as a first language. And as we were driving into Brooklyn, into a very Jewish neighbor, he said, too many Jews, too many Jews. He meant there's a lot of Jews. But when he said too many Jews, he meant there's a lot of Jews. So Pharaoh actually said, there's too many Jews, we got to get rid of them. And what did he say? Something quite horrible. Kol haben hayilod, any son that is born, send him into the river, to the Nile. Throw him into the Nile. Kill him. V'chol habas techayun. And all the daughters, you let them live. Now here's something interesting. He says this l'chol amo, to all of his people. Why is he giving this instruction to all of his people? Isn't this an instruction he would give to his army, to his police, to his secret service, to his FBI? Why is he telling every single Egyptian, any son that is born goes into the river? So some say that he was saying to his people, any Jewish child that is born, if you get wind of it, I'm giving this as a task to the entire nation. I want you to kill that Jewish boy. And that's why he's commanding all the people. But if you look at it, at the verse, it seems, if you just look at it at face value, it looks like he's telling his own people that they need to kill their own child. Otherwise, why does he have to tell the whole people? And why is there no mention over here of Jew? It just says, kol haben, every child. It would be, he should have said, every Jewish child, kol haben Yisraeli, or Ivri, shall be put into the Nile. So let's have a look now at Rashi. Rashi is a great commentator on the Torah from 1040-1105. But to be honest, this teaching of Rashi precedes Rashi. It comes from the Midrash, which is approximately the year 200. And probably comes from even earlier than that, but was recorded. We know it's recorded in the around the year 200. And what does he say? He says, L'chol amo, to all of his people. He focuses on this, these two words. He says, also upon his own people he decreed. Af alehem gazav. Why? Why did he do this? So Rashi tells us that he didn't do this as a broad decree, but specifically for that day. Yoim shenoylad Moshe. It was the day that Moshe was born. And Amru lo itstagninav. The astrologers. So here that word, itstagnin, is the astrologer. Told the astrologers of Paro told him, today the deliverer of the Jewish people, the people who's going to take them out of Egypt, is going to be born. We know it. But we don't know if he will be an Egyptian or if he will be a Jew. And we see that in the end, he's going to have his downfall, lilkot, a little bit, to be struck by water. So they have this kind of fuzzy vision. They know that somebody's going to be born. He's going to take the Jewish people out of Egypt. They're not sure if he's from Egyptian or he's a Jew. And they also see that in the end, he's going to suffer by water. So what do they say? Paro says, okay, great. Here's what we're going to do. Any male that is born, we throw him in the water. And then we'll fulfill what the astrologers have seen, and we'll get rid of the deliverer of the Jewish people. By the way, just as an aside, I remember seeing one of the commentators in the Talmud that the reason they weren't sure if it was an Egyptian or if he was a Jew, the reason they were getting a fuzzy signal was because Moshe ended up being raised as an Egyptian with an Egyptian adopted mother, with Basia, the daughter of Pharaoh. So this may have impacted their view and why they got a skewed view of what was going to happen. But in any case, this is the story. And so what would appear from this Rashi and from this Midrash is that there is something true about astrology. They got a lot of it right. They knew that that day Moshe was going to be born. They got some stuff wrong, but they got some stuff very right. So clearly we see there is something to astrology. That the Torah, that the Midrash at least, accepts this idea of astrology in the Torah. Any questions, comments so far?
No, not for me.
Okay. So what we would like to focus on today is, yes, we do find astrology in Judaism. However, the Judaism, that the astrology that we find in Judaism is very different from the astrology as was known in those times, or even perhaps as it is known these days. So let's start with one very important point. There is a way that idolaters are referred to in the Talmud as Akum, which is an acronym for Ovdei Kochavim Umazalot, that they are worshippers of stars and the planets and the mazalot and the constellations. And this we have to put off the table right away, the idea of worshipping the stars, worshipping the mazalot, that goes into the category of idolatry. God is the only one we worship. We don't pray to the stars. We don't pray to the planets. We pray to God. So what does it mean that there is some belief in astrology? What that says is that just as God gives fire the nature of heat, we don't pray to fire. Fire has no control over what it does. Similarly, these various planets have God imbued them with a natural ability, so that if a person is born under a certain star, that's going to impact their personality. But not that these planets or stars have any free choice to do anything. We have this in the Yom Kippur prayers. We say ki garzin biyad hachotzev, that the planets are like an axe in the hand of the woodchopper. God being the woodchopper, the planets being being the axe. The axe, is the axe chopping the tree? No, it's the one holding the axe. And so the stars and the planets have an impact according to this view, but they don't have control, they don't have free choice, and therefore there's no idea of worshiping them or praying to them. So that's a very important point we have to get off the table or on the table from the start. Even with the idolatry issue out of the way, we still have three major issues that we need to deal with when it comes to astrology. Number one is our own free choice, right? If we say that astrology, the way we were born, when we were born, what day of the month, what hour, is going to determine how we are going to behave, then that is a major problem. Judaism is going to have a major problem with that, because one of the tenets, one of the foundations of Judaism is the idea of free choice. So that's a problem, number one, we're going to have with pure astrology. Number two, the second problem we're going to have is with the issue of reward and punishment. Another tenet of Judaism is that if you do the right thing, you'll be rewarded. If you do the wrong thing, there is a consequence. If we say that everything is predetermined based on what day and hour I was born of which month under the zodiac, and that all determines what I'm going to do, then how could I ever be rewarded for doing anything right? It wasn't really me. It was just what I was programmed to do. And why would I be punished for doing anything wrong? It wasn't me. I was just programmed to do that. The third problem we're going to have is that in Judaism we have a special thing, also one of the 13 foundations of Jewish faith, is the idea of prophecy. That God reveals his will to the prophets, from Moses to Elijah to Isaiah and so forth. If astrologers are able also to see the future, then what is unique about a prophet that we say that the way to know if somebody is a prophet is that they can predict the future? The astrologers are also predicting the future. So those are the three issues where astrology and Judaism seem to clash. And what we're going to see in this class is that doesn't mean that we're going to throw out astrology, according to most of the rabbinic commentators. But we are going to have a unique view on how astrology works, Jewish astrology. Let's start with Rambam and the issue of free choice and the issue of reward and punishment. And this is text number 2. I'll pull it up on the screen for you. Moving right along. Here it is. Okay. Maimonides, Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon. He's known as Rambam, where I come from. Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon, or Maimonides, like the hospital named after him because he was a doctor. 1135 to 1204. Maimonides wrote a book called Mishneh Torah, and in his book called Laws of Repentance, he says as follows: let it not enter your mind, or even pass through your mind, what the foolish ones of the nation say, that God decrees upon a person from the beginning of his creation that either he will be a tzaddik or a rasha, righteous or wicked. No es posible. Rambam says, if it was true that God is commanding that a person would be wicked or righteous, I'm going to jump a little bit over here. How could he even command us through the prophets, do such and don't do such, or improve your ways, or don't follow your wickedness? If that's your nature and it was already decreed upon you, then you have no choice. He says these words, Umam mokem hoya l'chol ha-Torah kula. What place is there for all of the Torah? You can just throw the, God forbid, the Torah becomes irrelevant. And in what way would the wicked one be punished and would the righteous one receive reward? To quote the Torah itself, this is actually Abraham speaking to God. He says, Ha-shoifit kol ha-aretz lo yaseh mishpat. Shall the judge of all the earth not do justice? It doesn't seem just to punish a person for doing something that he's programmed to do. And there it is in English. Okay, so you got the Rambam. The Rambam is very clear that we have this idea of free choice in Judaism, and that without the idea of free choice in Judaism, then the whole Torah doesn't seem to have anything to say to us. Because if we have no ability to change ourselves, then it would be impossible for us to fulfill the words of the Torah. Good? Make sense?
Yes.
Awesome. Okay. So the Rambam addresses this issue, and what we have is, as we said, a seemingly a conflict between astrology and free choice, and astrology and reward and punishment. So let's start trying to reconcile astrology and free choice. So there's a phrase, it's in our book somewhere, natal astrology. Natal astrology, natal, you know, like what's happening in birth. And the Talmud agrees with this idea. As you can see in the page that we went through very quickly, the Talmud even has this idea that a person is born under Mars, they are more bloodthirsty. And there was a certain sage who was instructed, you know, you should become a shochet, you should become a ritual slaughterer to channel this bloodlust in a kosher direction. And the question is, how does this square with free choice? And luckily for us, this question was actually raised over 1,000 years ago by a rabbi in Pumpedita, which is today, I think, Iraq. And his name is Rav Shari Ragon. Let's have a look at what Rav Shari Ragon says in text number 4. Rav Shari Ragon, I mean, I think it's just incredible that we're going to be reading now a text from circa 906 to 1006 in the original. It's actually, a lot of it is in Aramaic. And addressing this question of how do you square this idea of natal astrology, which the Talmud seems to accept, with free choice. So here's what he says. Le'inyan ganvuta uzniyuta. Regarding these negative inclinations that a person may have towards theft or promiscuity, lo garim mazal ela tava v'teavon v'alma. So he says the mazal, the celestial bodies, only generate an inclination, a tava, which is a desire. A person who desires something, or he's crazy for something, for stealing, or for promiscuity, but he has the capacity to overcome his desire and to triumph over it. And he says this is the same as what we know as the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination that is in a person. The evil inclination has a vote. These are my words. I'm ad-libbing, paraphrasing. The evil inclination has a vote in what we do, but we are the ultimate judge. We are the CEO of the company. The Yetzer Hara can be, you know, from the committee sending us ideas, but the boss decides the way forward. Similarly, and so he says, so we have a Yetzer Hara. Sometimes you overcome the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination. Sometimes you don't. But you have the capacity to do so. The same thing with the impact of the celestial bodies on us that makes it harder for, makes us, head, it gives us a inclination in a certain direction. But God has given us the strength, Rahmana, the merciful one, l'mitche l'michpe, to push it away and to overcome it, to subdue it. Then he adds something and he says, a person who his mazal, meaning the way he was born, his inclination, forces him to have to overcome his mazal, and he has to really suffer with this. And it's hard work, and it's a challenge. He has a greater reward, kameshmaya, in the present, in before heaven, He has a greater reward than a person who never had to deal with this kind of challenge, with the challenge of this type of a mazel. Bottom line, he says, what is the mazel? What is the impact of the celestial bodies upon the person, the zodiac, or the hour they were born, the planet they were born under? It is basically a tava. It creates a desire, but the person ultimately has the ability to overcome it. Any questions, comments? So far?
And my take on that is that's where the choice of free will comes to, determination and free will. Despite the fact that you might be born under a certain astrological sign, you still have the capacity for determination and for free will.
Bidiyuk. Exactly. Exactly. So this is what Rabbi Sharira Gaon writes in the year approximately towards the end of the 10th century. This is exactly the point that he makes. So we discussed determinism as far as moral choices go, right? But what about determinism when it comes to what our life is going to look like materially? If we're going to be rich, if we're going to be poor, where we're going to live, what's going to happen to us? What about our material life? So there, maybe we would just accept. Deborah, were you going to say something? I thought you were trying to speak before, but you were muted.
Oh, no, I think I was just saying, can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you.
Oh, okay. I guess I was on mute before. I was just saying the same thing, free choice.
Free choice.
Now okay.
Exactly. Okay, great. So, on first glance, it seems like it's less of a contradiction to Judaism to say, yeah, this is what's going to happen to you. This is going to be how your life is going to go. That doesn't seem to contradict Judaism. It doesn't as much as this idea of free choice, which is such a fundamental Jewish belief, Torah belief. But it actually does come into conflict with another Jewish belief, which is the power of our deeds to impact our material experience and existence. And this can be seen from a fascinating story about the famous Rabbi Akiva. This is a great story, and I'll share the screen for that. Averting Destinies from the Talmud, Tractate Shabbat 156b, page 156b. Here's the story. Great story. I'll read it in the Aramaic here. Rabbi Akiva Havile Barto. Barto in Aramaic is a daughter, like Bat. Rabbi Akiva had a daughter. Amrile Kaldoi. The Chaldeans said to him. Now here they translate as astrologers. The Chaldeans were very good with astrology, and so they just called the astrologer the Chaldean. Hahu Yoimo Da'ailo Lebe Ginono. And the astrologer told him that she would be bitten by a snake on her wedding day and die. Torek la chivya umita. Chivya is a snake, is going to bite her. Umisa, she's going to die. Havadaiga amilsa tuva. Rabbi Akiva was very worried about this. Daiga, he was doeg. He was worried about this tuva a lot. Ahu yoima, it came the day of her wedding. And after the wedding, shkalta la machbanta datsta beguda. She took an ornament from her here, which was a pin, and she stuck it into the wall, beguda in the wall. Isrami esiv beinei dechivi, and it happened to be that she had poked it into the eye of a snake that was in the wall. Litzafra in the morning, kika shaklalo, and she took it out. Havakasarech basi chivya basa, the snake came out with it, with the pin. Amar la'avua, so clearly she had been saved from death by quote-unquote accident. Amar Lavua, so her father said to her, my Abdis, what special thing have you done to merit such a miracle? Amrale, Bifanya, in the evening, Asa Anya, in the afternoon, Asa Anya Karabava, there was a poor man who came was knocking at the door. Vavatridi kuli alma besudasa, and everybody was busy with the meal for the festivities. Veleka deshame, nobody heard him. Kaimno, so I got up. Shakalti lidis denai diavisli yaftiniale. I took the meal that was given to me, and I gave it to the poor man. The kala, the bride. Aside from my daughter, most brides are not thinking about who's standing at the door. They're worried about the dress and the hair and who they dance with, they didn't dance with, and the photographer, v'chule v'chule, etc., etc. And here was a kala, the bride, who is the only one who can hear that there's a poor person who needs a meal, and she gives him her own meal. Omar Law, he said to his daughter, Rabbi Kiva said to his daughter, mitzvah avadit, you did a great mitzvah. Nofak Rabbi Kiva v'dorash, and then he went out and he taught. Utzadoka tatzil mimavet. The charity, giving to the poor, can save a person from death, which is a verse in Proverbs. But Rabbi Kiva came out and said, so what was he saying? No, he's saying, this is real, this is true. Because he knew from the astrologers that she was supposed to die. She was destined to die, and her mitzvah of charity to the poor saved her life. Any comment or question on this incredible story? Okay. Rashi, in the next text, he sums it up. And he says that through mitzvahs, through good deeds, we can change our mazel. So again, we clearly have this idea that there is a mazel, even that impacts our physical life. But through our deeds, through our actions, we can change it. So again, similar to what we said about freedom of choice, astrology, our sign, or whatever you want to call it, is a factor, but it's not a definitive determination of what is going to of what we are going to do. That's what we said about freedom of choice. It's going to lead us in a certain direction, but it's not going to be the overriding factor. Our free choice is going to be the overriding factor. And the same thing is true regarding our material life, that yes, our astrological sign is going to impact, be a factor, maybe a major factor, in how our life is going to go, in our luck, so to speak, but it's not definitive. There's always a built-in override feature, which of course is God and our own deeds. So now we go to the third point.
Rabbi Marcus.
Yes.
The only question I have here is, how do you know if there's this predetermined kind of astrological intention for you? How do you know what mitzvah or mitzvot you need to do in order to change that destiny?
That's a great, great question. It's an excellent question. Mm-hmm. Let's keep going, because we're going to come back to this idea of, you know, how we... You know, we're still in the academic phase. We're going to get to the practical in part two. But that's an excellent question, and it does arise from this. Actually, when I read the story, I said, well, wait a second. Shouldn't we be going to astrologers and finding out if there's something amiss that we need to go do an extra mitzvah, go find a poor person to give a meal? So that's a great question, and we will get to it. And if I don't, remind me. I'm not trying to get out of it. It's an excellent question. Anyone else want to ask something or comment? Beseder, we keep going. So now to the third point of tension between Judaism and astrology. Three points of tension. The third one is prophecy. We know that what's unique about the prophet is that he can see what is in the future. He can tell us what's in the future. That's how we know he's a prophet. How does that differ from astrology, where the astrologers are also predicting the future? So if we go back to the story we started with, which was about Moses, on the one hand, the astrologers are very impressive. They know that on this day, Moshe is going to be born. Not they don't know his name, but they know that the deliverer of the Jewish people is going to be born on this day. That's very impressive. And that in the end, he's going to be Lilkot Bamayim. He's going to suffer through water. So they were actually onto something. On the other hand, they were also quite off in other matters. And the bottom line, as Rambam puts it, in order to be a to establish oneself as a prophet, the prediction that the prophet makes has to be tochna, exact, bidiyuk. You can't say, well, I think there's going to be rain in the next 3 days. It's got to be, it's going to rain at 2 p.m. In this place, and this is how much rain is going to be, and so forth. That is the stamp of a true prophet versus an astrologer who can predict vague things. Let's have a look again at the story of Moshe and the astrologers, and let's see what happened. First, we'll read Rashi, which through prayer and one's merit, your mazel can be changed for the good. Okay. So let's look what happened. Astrology's weakness. This is from the Midrash, and this is what I'm saying. This is about written about the year 200, as we had in our Booksmart course. And here's what the Midrash says. Tzofin ve'enan yodin matzofin. The astrologers, they chirp, but they don't know what they're chirping. They murmur, but they don't know what they're murmuring. They saw that the deliverer of the Jewish people was going to be judged by water. And they so they got up and they decreed that every male that is born, throw him in the river. Because they saw water. Okay, we're going to kill him with water. But once Moshe was actually put into the water by his mother, they said, they came to Pharaoh and they said, we now see that the deliverer of the Jewish people has already been thrown into the water. And so they stopped the decree. Miyad bitlo agzeira. But they did not know, shalmei meriva huloike. They did not know, when they were seeing that he's going to be judged by water, his downfall would come through water, it was actually the water of the rock, when he hit the rock, and because of that, he wasn't allowed to go into the land of Israel. That was, they were seeing something, but as we said before, the astrologer does not see with precision, they see something vaguely. And also with the fact that they put him in the water, they said, oh, he's done. He's been killed. So this is the point, as we cited from the Rambam, that the astrologers could see, ro'in ve'inan ro'in. They see, but they don't see. And this is the essential difference between an astrologer and a prophet. So we went through the three points of tension between astrology and Judaism. And what we came out with is that pure astrology, belief in astrology, is not kosher and is in conflict with major principles of Judaism. But what we're left with is the Talmud seems to embrace is a kind of astrology minus. Astrology minus, meaning astrology, again, is a determining factor. Even as far as predicting the future, there is some truth to it, but there's an overriding principle. You have the free choice. You can change your destiny through acts of goodness. What we see, by the way, from this text is that, first of all, the astrologer is not completely accurate. Now, in the case of the story with Rabbi Akiva, it was accurate. There was a snake coming to kill the girl. That was her destiny. But the second point is that even if it is accurate, it's still not accurate because God is ultimately in charge. And even if that was her destiny through tefillah and zechut, through prayer and merit, her mazel could be changed for the good. I should mention as a caveat, as part of our academic discussion, that Maimonides, he argued strongly, he didn't believe at all in any of these astrological impacts. he talks, I know that there's stories in the Talmud and the stories in the Midrash. I know all about them, but I interpret them differently. He doesn't get into too much detail how he's going to interpret it. But he was of the opinion, there were other rabbis as well in that period that said they didn't accept it, and they said that it is all in people's imagination. But on the other hand, as we saw, and we see in the book, that there are many, many great rabbinic authorities who did believe, as we were showing in these stories in the Talmud and the Midrash, that is very real. It does have a very real impact on a person. And but like I said, it's astrology minus, it's astrology with the Jewish, with the Yiddish tam, with the Jewish flavor, that it is a factor, but not the decider. Let's go to part two, because we're running out of time, and we want to get into the practical matters of how this works. What should we do? What should we actually do? If we found out now that astrology is not 100% not kosher, it's, you know, you got to put some major caveats on it. But should I look into it? Like I said, when I read the story of Akiva, maybe I should go ask an astrologer if there's any snakes, God forbid, in my future, and I need to go do something. Should I look into this? So we have a teaching here from Nachmanides, which I think is very essential to the whole discussion. Doesn't yet answer Rila's question, but it enters us into the discussion. Let's see. Ramban. We're jumping through all of Maimonides over here. Oh, wow, this is a very nice picture. Ramban. Okay, here I'm going to be scrolling quickly through many great rabbis. Ibn Ezra. This is an interesting factoid for y'all. There is something called the Ibn Ezra crater on the moon. Did you know that? So now you know it. Even if you got nothing else from the class, you know that there is a crater on the moon that is named after the Ibn Ezra, who is a great rabbi from 1092 to 1167, whose commentary on the Torah, on the five books of Moses, is published in the classic editions of Chumash with Rashi and Ramban, Nachmanides, and Ibn Ezra. He's on every page, and also the prophets and writings as well. And he was an astronomer, and the moon has been mapped out, and they've given names. I'm not sure exactly when they gave all these names to the various parts of the moon, but one of the craters is called the Ibn Ezra. Okay, so Ibn Ezra spoke a lot about astrology. Here he says he wrote, I think, seven books on astronomy. Okay, not astrology, but he writes about astrology. Another rabbi here, 913. Here's Maimonides writing against it. So we have a. You know, if you don't believe in it, you've got rabbis who will back you up, and if you do believe in it, you also got rabbis who back you up. Let's look at what Nachmanides says. Practically speaking, should I be delving into this whole issue of astrology and seeing what's in my future? So zokt eilik Nachmanides v'tam tomim tia mashem lekach. There is a verse in Deuteronomy 18:13. Tomim tia mashem lekach. You shall be tamim, wholehearted, complete, pure, unblemished with the Lord your God. What does that mean? That we should dedicate our hearts only to God, and we should believe that only He does all. He controls everything. And we should not seek out astrologers or others, and we should not put our trust that their words are going to come true. If we hear something from them, we should still say, Hakol bidei shamayim. Everything is in the hands of heaven. God is God. Elyon al hakol. He is above all. He has the capacity in all. He can change. He can move things around. He can move the furniture around in heaven. And we should believe that all future occurrences will be according to our service of God. So what do we have from Nachmanides? Nachmanides is saying, it could be that there is, it's true, it's not true, it doesn't matter. The Torah is telling us, we should put our faith in God. not to go and seek out these astrologers and what they're going to say, but our faith in God. And even if we hear something from them, we should continue to have our faith in God, that He is ultimately in control. In fact, this is cited in Halakha, in Jewish law, in the Shulchan Aruch, Code of Jewish Law, Rabbi Yosef Karo, 1565. Ein shoalin b'chozim b'kochavim. We do not make inquiries from astrologers. The Hebrew is chozim b'kochavim, those who peer into the stars, those who look into the stars. So it's Halakha. We're not supposed to do that. Rambam actually takes it even further. He considers it a biblical prohibition, but the other rabbis don't take it to such an extreme. He says, "Ain sholim." It's not, should not be done. Now, the truth of the matter is that this is kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy, or it's a circular relationship. When you have the faith in God, that itself helps you to overcome whatever it is that is in the stars. Why? Because we, as we saw in Rashi, in the story of Akiva, that our merits, our good deeds, and our prayers, that impacts what's going to happen to us. So if we are fixated on the astrological that says, oh, this terrible thing, God forbid, is going to happen, that causes a weakness in our faith. But if we go with faith, faith itself is a mitzvah. Faith in God is a mitzvah. In the words of the Tzemach Tzedek, Tracht gut vet zayn gut. When you think and you have the faith in God that is going to be good, because God is our Father in heaven, He's going to take care of us, our Father is merciful, that itself is a mitzvah that impacts the outcome. And so here we have a straight out of Rabbi Yehuda ben Asher from the 13th century in Germany, who says, Im niftach b'Hashem b'chol ma'aseinu, if we have firm faith in God regarding everything we do, Hu yishana lono ateledes min alatayv. He will transform the astrological destiny from bad to good. So we're starting to have an answer. What special mitzvah can you do to change your destiny? So here it is straight out that one of the mitzvahs you could do is to have the faith. To have faith that God is in control and that God can make it better. And that faith itself is the mitzvah that can actually change the future, change the destiny to good. Okay.
So my question there is, yes. Okay, so if that's the case, then what happens to free will?
How do you mean?
Well, if it's a mitzvah to believe in God and to leave your fate in God's hands, then the dichotomy for me, the question there is, so what about your free will? If you exert free will, unless you're exerting free will in the form of believing in leaving your destiny to God, you're not going to achieve what it is.
Right. So I think basically. I think if I understand what you're asking, when we talk about faith in God, it's important to say that it doesn't mean that God is going, that we can sit back and wait for God to do things for us, right? Okay. The famous story of the guy who was waiting on the island to be saved. The helicopter came and he said, oh, God is going to save me. And the boat came and said, God is going to save me. And he waved them off. And then no one came to save him, and he was dying of thirst. He turns to God. He said, hey, why didn't you save me? And God says, who do you think sent you the helicopter? Who do you think sent you the boat?
We still make choices and freedom of choice. That's
exactly a big thing. So God forbid if somebody has an illness, they don't say, I have faith in God that I will be healed. Well, maybe there's very few people that are on that level. But the Torah actually says you have to go to a doctor. V'rapo yirape in Parshas Mishpatim. Torah doesn't say just pray to God and you'll be healed. It says go to the doctor. But the doctor is the angel of God, is the messenger of God, and many doctors actually practice in this way and recognize it, that they are the agents to provide the healing. We are doing, we are, okay, let's say it rains and you're thirsty. You got to put out a cup to catch the rain. And so when it comes to health, when it comes to earning a living, a person also cannot sit at home and say, I'm waiting for the check from God to arrive. From Uncle Sam, yes, but not from God. So,
yeah,
it's a subject unto itself, and yeah. The crux of it is, the bottom line of it is, that God set it up in such a way that we need to do what is called making a kli, making a vessel. We need to make a vessel for God's blessing, and so we know what we need to do in the physical realm, but we always have to keep in mind that it's not the doctor who's going to heal us. It's God who's going to heal us. And we are making the vessel for God's blessing by going to the doctor because we know that that's what God wants us to do. It's not my boss who's going to, put money into my bank account. God is going to put money in my bank account. But in order for me to receive the material blessings of funding, I need to work. I need to have a job, or I need to have a business. I need to work my business and so forth. The funding is going to come from God, but I need to create a vessel for the divine blessing to come. Now, it could be that the divine blessing will come through a different vessel, and I was completely wrong, but I need to do my part in to create a garment for God's blessing to come. So that's, I think, does that answer your question about
where those
okay.
It does.
Okay.
So the other question is, how does Bashert come into it?
Bashert. Okay. So I think that's a good point. Bashert is a Yiddish word. It would be interesting to find out the etymology of where it comes from. I don't know. Bashert, when something happens that is meant to be, right? Bashert, it was meant to be. It wasn't Bashert, it wasn't meant to be. Bashert, who is your Bashert when you talk about your soulmate is called your Bashert, the one that is destined for you. So I think that goes into the same thing, that that there really is no ultimate Bashert. It does say about soulmates, there is in the Talmud that before we are born, this one is. So that type of Bashert, I would say, is something that the Talmud says is something that it is. This is the one you're going to marry and so forth. But in general, when it says Bashert, for something like it was Bashert for the person to become ill, God forbid, what we're saying here, or the Talmud is saying, no, all of these things can practically be changed. But Bashert, in the sense that astrology is true, that there is it is a factor, and it's a prediction that is pretty good, but there is an overriding factor that can change it. I want to go back to something that I was thinking about, free choice, right? And Bashert, free choice and Bashert, and destiny. I heard from somebody a number of years ago something fascinating. He had gone to a reunion of friends who had been classmates in high school, and this was an older guy. And so it's many years later, he went to this reunion, he came back, and I asked him, how was it? And he told me something so interesting. He said, everybody there is pretty much the same person that they were in high school, with all their flaws and all their features and all their characteristics. He said there was one guy there that was a changed person. And I said, wow, this is it. This is it. There's a destiny. There is that's the downstream. The downstream is our destiny. That's just going to happen. It's the path of least resistance. That's the Bashert. But if a person utilizes their free choice, then they can become a different person. They can overcome. They can, as God told Abraham, "Tse mi itztagninut shelcha," go out from that place of itztagninut, of astrology. There's a whole new world out there, and that's the realm of the divine, and that's the realm of free choice. So Bashert, I think, in a positive connotation, when somebody gets engaged or married, they found their Bashert. But the Bashert in the sense of doomed, in a negative sense, I would say no.
Yeah, because for me, the Beshet has always been, you can make a difference in the Beshet. The Beshet is not just the Beshet. So it depends on your intention and your contribution and your fight to make a Beshet into something positive, not just to accept the Beshet as the negative energy.
Exactly. Right. You have a role in it. And a determining role.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're at 8:30, and we have two more important points that I want to make. So we're going to go a little over time. I usually try to like to end around 8:30. So if you have to go, I won't be insulted. But I'm going to go for two more points. First, I want to read to you a letter of the Rebbe, Rabbi Schneerson, from a book called The Letter and the Spirit that sums this up so beautifully that we just have to read the letter. Here it is. It gives you kind of the approach, the Hasidic approach and the Rebbe's approach specifically. He says, I duly received your letter in which you ask about the Jewish attitude to horoscopes. Generally, astrology and the like play no part in Jewish life. No part. Wow. As it is also written in the Holy Scriptures, of the signs in heaven you shall have no fear. Jeremiah. Wow. That's an important verse. On the contrary, we have thou shalt be wholehearted with God your God, as we just saw from Nachmanides, which is also quoted in Shulchan Aruch, as we saw. This means that the Jew has to have complete faith in God and his benevolent providence, which extends to each and everyone individually. As for taking an interest in horoscope, purely as a curiosity and the like, this would amount to a waste of interest, I think a waste of time, which should be channeled in a more productive way. It is explained in Chassidus that God has not given man an excess of capacities, nor deficiency of it. In other words, every person has been given a certain amount of capacities, all of which must be utilized in the fulfillment of his purpose in life on this earth, namely to live in accordance with the Torah and mitzvahs and disseminate justice and righteousness. So if a person should divert any of his capacities on a useless thing, even if it be harmless, it is nevertheless harmful in the sense that he would create a deficiency in the area in which is important as for him. So the Rebbe doesn't say, no, that the horoscope, stay away from it because it's, you know, evil and all that. He just says it's a waste of time. When it comes to astrology, he says, the verse clearly says, we are not to fear it from Jeremiah. Now for the last piece, which I offered as a teaser before. You know, there are people who are completely, who say, astrology, yes, Bubba Mises, right? Bubba Mises is Yiddish for, you know, old wives' tales. Ironically, science, which would dismiss astrology, maybe some scientists, I don't know, I haven't done a survey. In some cases, science has created a new astrology in the sense of a modern determinism. What we saw was that what our sages, thousands of years ago, what God is telling Abraham, thousands of years ago, your fate is not predetermined. Your actions are not predetermined. That is actually making a comeback today in the scientific community, in the psychology community. There are, quote unquote, big people, experts, quote unquote, who claim that we don't have free choice. They don't believe in free choice. Your nature is determining everything that you're doing. And so the same message that the Torah taught thousands of years ago, which you thought, oh, this is an old message for, you know, people in ancient times. No. This message is coming back today to reinforce the idea, as we saw from Rambam, that there is no determinism. We have the free choice. And there's a beautiful quote here from Jonathan Sacks, Olav HaShalom, Chief Rabbi of Britain. I'll read it here. Free will is one of the fundamental beliefs of Judaism. Okay, this we reiterate from Rambam. So the problem is an ancient one. It has become much more salient in modern times. The sheer accumulator challenge, blah, blah, blah. Marx said history is formed by the play of economic forces. Freud argued that we are what we are because of unconscious drives. Neo-Darwinians say that however we rationalize our behavior, We do what we do because people who behaved this way in the past survived to hand on their genes to the future generations and so forth. So what he's saying is that today we have a whole slew of experts and scientists that are saying we don't have free will. And so it's even in our modern day, we have the message of Rambam and the message that we were learning tonight of ancient astrology saying that you don't have free choice, that everything is predetermined. We need that message today as much as then, because we have new voices that are saying in the name of science that free choice is purely a mirage. No, Torah tells us freedom of choice is very real. This is what life is about. And I want to conclude with a teaching from Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak, who's the Rebbe's father-in-law, from 5703. And here we're going to flip it a little bit and say like this. The approach of astrology in general is that this kind of a top-down a view of the world, that I am this little cog in the wheel over here, and I'm just swallowed up by the vast heavens and what's been predetermined for me. That's kind of a view from astrology. Judaism flips it and puts me, each individual, at the top, at the center. Let me read to you the beautiful words of Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Schneerson, known as the Friedrich Rebbe, previous Rebbe, passed away in 1950. He says like this, Zikne Hachsidim haben erzählt. This is in Yiddish. The older Hasidim told the following, that the Alter Rebbe came from Mizrich, which is in Ukraine, I believe, and he taught the following. He said, Da malamailo mimcho, know what is above you. And he translated, not know what is above you, but know that what is above is from you. Mimcho, uvecho hakol toli. In you, everything above, everything that is above is dependent upon you. You are the center. And he said it very poetically. Atik d'atzilus, the highest levels of atzilus, the highest of the four worlds, and atik, the highest level of that world, is waiting for us to say a word of Torah. The angels above are waiting for us to say a prayer, Kedusha, Kadosh Kadosh, and Amen. And the earth that we are walking upon is waiting from the 6 days of creation until somebody will walk by and say a kapitel of Tehillim, a chapter of Psalms, or two people will be sitting, standing together and saying words of Torah. So Chassidus flips the whole thing. We're not a small little creature in this vast cosmos being impacted and directed by what is happening in the heavens, but to the contrary, we are impacting what is happening in heaven. And ultimately, going back to the words of Nachmanides, Ramban, that is what Tomim Tiyem Hashem Elokecha means. You should be wholehearted with the Lord your God. That in that way, going back to Abraham, you're connecting with what is much greater than all of the heavens, all of the constellations, all of the stars and the planets. You're going, which is vast and is powerful and is huge. And you can understand why people worshipped it, when people felt beholden to it. But all of that is finite. All of that is finite. A small being and a vast being are very different, but they're on the same scale. One is more, one is less. But when you come to the realm of the infinite, there is no difference between a small little ant and the greatest planet. They're both equally small in comparison to the infinite. And so when you're Tomim Hashem Elokecha, when you're wholehearted with the Lord your God, when you put your faith in God, when you put your life, you live a life in connection with God, you transcend the heavens. You go out from Yitzdagninut and can not only transcend the heavens, but you are the one who is impacting the entire world. That, my friends, concludes tonight's class. We will stay open for questions and comments if anybody wants to stick around. If you need to go, we won't be offended. And we'll look forward to seeing you next week. Same time, same place. And same station. Ah. Well, it's good to see everybody.
What are we supposed to do with it? Like, obviously, if the Talmud and the Mishnah are supporting it, what was their side of why would they exist to begin with?
That's a great question. I was thinking about that as well, particularly when we read that part from Rav Sharira Gaon from Pumpedita in the year 900 or so, who was asked this question of the conflict of astrology and free choice. And he says over there, and he seems to answer this question, because he says, when a person is challenged by his own nature, which is governed by the inclination, governed by the astrological signs, he receives greater reward. And so you're asking, why does God create it that way? God is creating conditions that make it more of a challenge for us. So he says it about reward. And so you could look at that as, oh, we're going to get rewarded in heaven, or we're going to get some kind of points. But there's really inner reward that when you overcome something, and we know from people who face severe challenge and they overcome it, that they have a certain richness to their being, to their personality, to their presence, that a person who didn't go through those challenges and kind of had, you know, calm waters doesn't have. And so I would say that the purpose of it is, we don't know the ways of God ultimately, but we can see one of the benefits of it is, as he says, where you have this greater reward, inner reward, through overcoming the challenge. And if we were created all easygoing and perfect, we wouldn't have that experience, and we wouldn't, our inner strength would not be actualized. I think that's one aspect of it. There's another aspect of it is the idea of freedom of choice. That this actually gives us freedom of choice, because as we say right in the beginning of Genesis, God creates parallels for everything. If there was only the holy path, it wouldn't be a challenge. There wouldn't be free choice. It would just be obvious. We'd always just do the right thing. We'd always follow God and have faith in God and be done with it. But because there's another path, there's like a fake faith in God. And that's like, you know, thinking you're going to figure it all out by reading the stars and consulting the astrologers, and you're going to be able to control the future. So it's giving you kind of a false faith. So it's giving you an option, and you need to have a false option in order to be able to choose the correct option. So number one, it's giving us greater reward. And number two, it's giving us freedom of choice. Does that answer the question?
It does.
Kind of.
I'm still wondering, but I just wanted, this is just a comment. So in Israel, there are several very old synagogues from the Talmud and the Mishnah, like Tzipori and Susia, I think, and a few others that have beautiful, basically, mosaics with astrological signs that are in the middle of the synagogue. So it seems as if maybe in this time of the Talmud and the Mishnah, it was really part of basically practicing Judaism to believe in astrological signs if they've put this inside a synagogue.
It definitely is a belief. It's in the Talmud that this is real. Mazal tov is actually means mazal, your mazal, that that should be like you say in Yiddish, in a gitashur, b'sha tova, in a good hour, it should be in a good hour. So the belief is there, and the extent of how much emphasis was put on it is a good question. I mean, the fact that there is decorations, that's how they decorated the synagogue. I mean, I don't know how much of a proof you can find. There are also lions. Lions feature very, very prominently in synagogue design and over the ark. So I don't know how much I would put into that. But yeah, you're probably right that there was a greater emphasis on it and more discussion about it.
It was influenced by other religions than were...
Exactly.
It could Israel be. At the same time. So it's not something that I see was carried out in, like, you know, it's a very specific period, right? That
right.
It has been used. I do not see it being used in a synagogue decoration nowadays.
Right.
Or maybe I'm wrong here, but.
Right.
At least not a Chabad synagogue.
Right. Exactly. All right. Well, thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen. We will see you next week. Have a great night.
Thank you, Rabbi Marcus.
My pleasure. My pleasure.